Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, February 21st, 2021. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope everyone had a great week. Going to go through a list of topics for today's episode, then we'll jump into it. So in this edition of the Weekender, we're going to have reviews for GCW's Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 5. We have MLW Filthy Island results, results for Impact Wrestling, 205 Live, NXT UK, Ring of Honor. We have a recap of the latest BTE episode titled Dior. I hope I'm saying that right. But Being the Elite, the newest episode there. And before we get out of here, I'll give you some quick predictions for WWE Elimination Chamber, because that pay-per-view is tonight as of the time of this recording. So I'll throw out some quick predictions there just to get them on the record. And before we get into all that, as always, I have my recommended show for y'all on independentwrestling.tv. And this week, it's not just one show, we're doing two shows. Both from the same company, took place on the same night. So we have Action Wrestling, that's the company. The first show is No Easy Way Out. The second show is Eyes on the Throne. So, we're first going to talk about No Easy Way Out, because it happened, and then it led right into Eyes on the Throne. So, as far as this show went, started off with Hoodfoot, Mo Atlas, taking on Logan Creed. We had The Skulk, the team of Liam Gray and Adrian Alanis, taking on Bobby Flacco and Rob Killjoy. Kevin Ryan versus Eli Knight. Dominic Guarini versus Damian Tangra. Graham Bell versus Two Fly Ty versus CT Keys versus Orion Bishop in a four-way. We had Cabana Man Dan taking on Shug D. And in the main event of this show, basically part one of the two-part night, we had Nolan Edward taking on Anthony Henry. So, a lot of people I want to highlight throughout this show and throughout this whole night on both cards. So, Hoodfoot Mo Atlas versus Logan Creed. I like this a lot. And these are two big guys who hit hard. Mo Atlas, a.k.a. Hoodfoot, has been doing great stuff in Paradigm Pro under the UWFI rules, all that stuff they've been doing there. Everywhere that Hoodfoot is at, he's making a big impression right now. And I think he's very talented. He presents something different. He has this do-rag that he wears. He doesn't always wear it, but it's pretty hilarious, and it's meant to be funny. But he has this one do-rag, or I guess multiple do-rags, but the point is, he has them in, like, they're so long that they, like, he puts them on, they sit on his head, but they flow off like a cape all the way onto the ground. Like, it's pretty funny. I've never seen something like it before, but I really like Mo Atlas. I love the heavy-hitting style that he brings. And Logan Creed, I had my mind blown the other day, guys. So, I was talking about Logan Creed to one of my friends who actually works with Action Wrestling. And while we were talking, I was like, man, it's so strange to me that you never hear about Logan Creed, like, with any eyes on him from, like, the WWE or AEW. Like, this guy's got the size and, you know, he's good in the ring. And, like, I'm just surprised he's not on anyone's radar. It's really wild that I don't hear about him. And then he was like, my buddy was like, well, it's because he's signed to MLW right now. And I was like, oh, really? How am I missing that? Like, I cover MLW every week for Fightful. And then it clicked with me, and I was like, wait, is he Mods Kruger? And he was like, yeah, he's Mods Kruger on MLW. And I was like, oh my God, my mind was blown. Because it's so funny, because I like Logan Creed as Logan Creed on the indies. And I've been pretty critical of the Mods Kruger character here on the Weekender, because I think his kind of never-ending feud with Hammerstone, I like Hammerstone a lot, but I haven't liked the Kruger character on MLW. And I don't really like the feud with him and Hammerstone and kind of where it's gone and how it just hasn't ended yet. So it's really funny how on MLW I wasn't a fan of the guy, but out on the indies, I have been a fan of his work. So I was told a couple things about him kind of going forward that I think are going to be really interesting. So keep your eyes out. I think we're going to be seeing better things from Kruger on MLW. But my mind was blown. I was like, I couldn't believe I didn't put that together. I've been watching both guys as different characters and didn't realize it was the same person. So that was pretty funny. Some other people to mention here on this show, Bobby Flacco and Rob Killjoy are two of my favorite wrestlers that are, you know, regulars at Action Wrestling. Killjoy, of course, a part of the Ugly Ducklings. And Flacco is like the hometown guy. And he's super over with the crowd, and I'm just a big fan of his. I'm a big fan of both guys. You know, any opportunity I get to, you know, talk about Rob Killjoy, and Bobby Flacco, I take that opportunity. So check out their work, y'all. If they're not on your radars, they should be. Kevin Ryan on the show as well. I've been talking about him a lot on the Weekender. He's a guy who I still think has a lot of untapped potential, and I really like what he's been doing since he's been aligned with Shug D. We had Dominic Greeny versus Damian Tanger was a really good matchup stylistically. Really enjoyed that one. I always like seeing Greeny. I'll talk about him a little bit more when we talk MLW. We had Graham Bell. He's a guy I always talk about here on the show. He's been a great character in action wrestling lately because he's like this mercenary for hire. That's his gimmick. But lately, he's been like an important piece of the puzzle to a lot of the big stories going on with action wrestling. And he's very good in the ring. I like his in-ring style a lot. I've been raving about his match from last year in the same company, Action Wrestling, Graham Bell versus Manders from last year. I always recommend that as one of my matches to watch from 2020. And Graham Bell, I mean, if you haven't ever seen him, the guy brings a damn bazooka to the ring and fires it. So check him out if you haven't already. Cabana Man Dan and Shug D, this was really great stuff. And these two guys, I mean, Shug D's been around for so long, and I love the character he has right now, where he's kind of like this bitter veteran who had his chance in AEW, but like he got kind of clowned on because he was Pineapple Pete in AEW. And he's brought Kevin Ryan under his wing because Kevin Ryan's another guy who's been slept on for way too long. And he's looking for a big opportunity, so he's aligned with Shug D. And then you have Cabana Man Dan, who, you know, we talk about him all the time from all the stuff he does in SUP, especially the stuff he does with New South. He's like one of the main, he's like, when I think of New South, Cabana Man Dan's actually the first person I think about. To me, he's like the face of that company. And Cabana Man Dan's just been doing all this great stuff, but he's been around for quite a while too. And you're starting to see character changes in him. And it's really interesting with the story that he's been having with Shug D and Kevin Ryan coming into the show. And then in the main event of, you know, this half of the night, we had Nolan Edward taking on Anthony Henry. And Nolan Edward, I'll talk about him a little bit more when we talk Bloodsport. But Nolan Edward is a guy who I consider to be the rookie of the year for 2020. Technically speaking, he started in 2019, but like towards the end of it. And then 2020 being such a weird year, right? Like, to me, Nolan Edward's the rookie of the year from last year. And he took on Anthony Henry, who was actually making his last indie appearance. You know, he's done. He's signed. So to where, I will not say, but I heard quite a while back where he was heading. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, the future for Anthony Henry. And I really, really look forward to the future of Nolan Edward as well. Like, this was a great match and a great moment of, like, somebody in Anthony Henry who could be considered by many to be one of the best, you know, Southern, if you consider like Southern independent, you know, kind of based on, you know, a lot of the time that he spent where he spent on the indies for most of his run. I really view him as like kind of like a Southern guy. And he is one of the best that this region has ever produced. I hear Dylan Hales talk about that all the time. And Dylan Hales, I talk about him a lot on the show because he's a guy whose opinion on pro wrestling I really take to heart because I think he's been so right on so many talents over the years that, I really value his opinion. And, you know, to him, when he talks about Anthony Henry, it's like, this is one of the best guys we've ever seen, you know, from around this area, do what he does on the independents. And then you had Nolan Edward on the other side of it, like the guy who's going to be the next to be one of the guys to carry that on. And after the match, Anthony Henry gave this great, you know, going away speech, and he actually inducts Nolan Edward into the Work Horsemen, which was awesome because, you know, you got Anthony Henry, JD Drake, you know, his longtime tag team partner and ally. And then you have Nolan Edward now, you know, technically as a part of that group just based off of the respect and, you know, the potential there, which it was all really, really well done. I won't spoil any of the matches or moments or let you know who won or lost any of these because I want you to go, you know, check this stuff out yourself. This was great stuff. I've loved Action Wrestling, and I've been talking about them a lot lately, and they honestly probably put on their two best shows that I've ever seen, and they were back-to-back in one night. And that's it, you know, speaking of that, the next one, right away, same night, All Eyes on the Throne. We had Akira taking on Angelus Lane, Robert Martyr taking on Adam Priest, Chase Holiday taking on Alex Kane, Fred Yehi taking on Kevin Koo, a one-and-done challenge where it just had to be a one count, not a three count. So once the referee hit the mat once for a one count, the match is over. It was Jaden Newman taking on Matt Sells. And Jaden Newman's career in action wrestling was on the line. We had Action Wrestling Championship, no DQ match, AC Mack defending the title against Eric Royal. So just another whole set of great matches, great characters, a lot of great stuff here. Akira, you know, I spoke a lot about Nolan Edwards just now. Akira accompanied Nolan Edwards out for his match, and Nolan Edwards accompanied Akira out for his. They are part of the KOBK crew. We have Akira, Nolan Edwards, my boy Moe's, who's actually on commentary there for Action Wrestling. We had Brett Eisen in that group, and they've been teasing that a little bit, the, you know, kind of a little bit more of a KOBK presence, you know, out there on the indie scene. We got, you know, Lutha X in that mix. We got Heater in that mix. Heater not being on the show, Lutha not being on the show, but there's KOBK presence here, and it's great to see Akira and what he's doing. Angelus Lane, one of the best female independent wrestlers in the world, somebody that I think was a big part of why SUP, Southern Underground Pro in Nashville, became as successful as it did, as fast as it did, because Angelus Lane, I think, brought a lot of instant credibility to that company when it started. She was involved in some of the biggest main storylines that really, I think, put SUP on the map. So huge respect to Angelus Lane. And, you know, Kira's doing great stuff. He's a guy, you know, his alliance with Nolan Edwards is so awesome because it's built, and same with all those KOBK guys, like, it's built out of this respect. Like, Akira and Nolan beat the hell out of each other when they wrestle each other. Like, they're down to throw down every weekend against each other. But because of their respect level, you know, for each other, they're also a team. You know, like, it's really cool, the dynamic there. You know, I mentioned Adam Priest being a part of this show. He's a guy who just keeps doing consistently good work. Just keeps getting out there, keeps doing good stuff. You can see him every now and then on AEW Dark. He's got a ton of talent, you know, especially if you're looking at, you know, technical wrestling talent. Adam Priest is one of the best out there right now on the indie scene, especially in, like, the Southeast area. Chase Holiday and Alex Kane, I think both these guys are very, very good. I'm especially impressed with Alex Kane. Nothing against Chase Holiday. I think Chase Holiday is, I think he's going to be a big deal on the indies too. He already is becoming one, but Alex Kane, I think Alex Kane is going to be, I always talk about that indie wrestling totem pole where, like, right now at the top of, we'll put it this way, at the top of that totem pole, just, you know, a few weeks ago, we had, in over the last few months, we had guys like Alex Zane, Ben Carter, Blake Christian, who have all been signed. I've had Anthony Henry up there on the top of that list for a very long time. There's guys like Mance Warner and Matthew Justice that are there right now that I feel like at any point we could be talking about heading off to, you know, to a bigger, you know, mainstream company and all that stuff. I think Alex Kane is going to be on that level very soon. That's how excited I am to see what happens for the future with that guy. He's very talented. He presents something different. He's got a good look. He's believable in the ring. And once again, this is nothing against Chase Holiday. I think Chase Holiday has a very good look as well. He's a guy that I think will do very good as a heel. I think he'll do good as a babyface as well, but I think he'll really excel as a heel. That's my personal opinion. Also on the show, you had Kevin Koo versus Freddie Ahai. I'll talk a little bit more about Kevin Koo when we get to MLW, but, you know, always shout out to Kevin Koo. We had, Freddie Ahai on the show, who was also on Ring of Honor, so I'll talk about him a little bit more later as well. But Freddie Ahai is one of the best technical wrestlers in the entire world, and I love that he's getting this opportunity that he is in Ring of Honor, because he's a guy that you could put on any show, and the show is going to be better. Put him on AEW, you can put him on NXT, you can put him on New Japan, you can put him on Impact, you can put him where he's at with Ring of Honor, anywhere on the indies. If you have Freddie Ahai on your show is immediately better, because you're guaranteed a good, solid wrestling match. You know, what more can you really say? That's about the best endorsement I can give somebody. And Yehai is on the top of that totem pole. Like, Yehai is ready right now to do anything. And someone like Alex Kane, I think, is, like, making his way to being kind of one of those next guys, to just kind of give you a little comparison there. We had Jaden Newman and Matt Sells, like I mentioned before. This was, you know, a lot of comedy, but a lot of comedy that makes total sense, because if you've been following their story and what they've done, and the way that Matt Sells beat him when they wrestled the first time by literally humping the back of his head until Jaden Newman was knocked out. You know, this was a great story, and this was a good ending to the story. So yeah, no spoilers. I'll let y'all check it out to see kind of what happens with Sells and Newman here. But, you know, I have a ton of respect for Jaden Newman. Talk about him a lot on this show as well. Guy to Chattanooga. He runs TWE. I mean, he's only probably 22 years old, and he's already training the next generation of guys. And I hear nothing but amazing stuff out of, you know, out of TWE and how people feel about that camp and that school and Jaden and stuff. It's always just super positive reviews. So huge props to Jaden Newman for everything he's doing. And Matt Sells is a guy who's very, very over at Action Wrestling. Like he's a guy who lost for a very long time and then finally won. And now he's like one of the, just like the main dudes, you know, and his storyline with Newman has been very entertaining. And then in the main event, we had AC Mack, who coming into this was at around 800 days as the Action Wrestling champion, defending the title against Eric Royal, a man who he wrestled a few months back, and that match wound up just, I believe it was a DQ, like a whole bunch of stuff happened, and there was like a non-finish. So this is Eric Royal's big opportunity to try to dethrone AC Mack. So tune in, if for no other reason, I mean, you should watch all the stuff I've been saying because it's all incredible, but if for no other reason, you know, check this out. Can AC Mack get to day 800, which is an amazing feat? And can Eric Royal be the one to stop him? Because Eric Royal, you know, up to this point, if you've been listening to The Weekender, Eric Royal is a guy who's been climbing the ranks in Action, and he is really the biggest threat to AC Mack's championship. So check it out. Check out Action Wrestling. Amazing stuff. It's all available right now on independentwrestling.tv. All right, moving on into results. We're going to start off this week with Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 5. This, of course, brought to you by GCW Game Changer Wrestling. This is one of my favorite types of shows. I really enjoy the kind of the shoot style MMA, you know, hybrid wrestling type style stuff. You know, I really like how Paradigm Pro has been doing that. I've been talking about that a lot lately, and I think that Josh Barnett's Bloodsport probably does it the best of anyone right now. And I love the presentation. I really, really enjoyed this show from top to bottom. And it started off with Calder McCall defeating Bad Dude Tito, got the win after he hit a flying knee into a rear naked choke. So that puts Calder McCall at 1-1 and Bad Dude Tito at 0-2 as their records in Bloodsport. After that, we had Calvin Tankman defeating Nolan Edward. And I've talked about Nolan a little bit already, of course, from Action Wrestling. The only issue I have with this at all is that I feel like Bloodsport isn't giving Nolan enough respect. Now, I talked about this last week. I think I talked about it last week on the show. If I didn't, I definitely meant to. But last week, like, it seemed like Josh Barnett didn't really know who Nolan Edward was. He kept calling him Nolan Edwards with an S. And if anyone's been following the indies and follows Nolan in particular, that's like a big pet peeve, is not getting his name right. I remember even the graphic for Bloodsport 4 last week. It said Nolan Edwards with an S. I think they even had him build from like, they had him build from like some random state that he's never been to. It was really bizarre. So this week, you know, luckily they got his name right. Barnett was calling him Edward, not Edwards, this week and stuff. So, you know, I think that they've done a pretty decent job of like trying to fix that. But then on commentary, they make it seem like Nolan Edward isn't supposed to be beating anybody. Like they kind of talk about him like he's this jobber where, like, I don't know, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Part of that has to do with the fact that I'm a big Nolan Edward fan. I mean, admittingly, but it's also one of these things where, like, he's out there kicking ass on the indies. Like, he isn't some guy who's just going out there and, like, losing matches. Like, he's winning some big matches, too, and having these kick-ass fights and matches where he's, like, going through hell. And some of the deathmatch stuff he's done is just completely insane. So I don't feel like he's, like, this giant underdog every time he fights in Bloodsport. Now, granted, he was in there against Calvin Tankman, who I'm a humongous fan of. I talk about him a lot when we talk about MLW. He's a guy that if he wasn't signed to MLW, he'd be on everyone's radar anyways. But I think MLW is going to help him quite a bit. I think by the time he's done there, if he signed like a 1 or 2 year deal with MLW, I think that he'll probably move on to like, he'll definitely get signed. I mean, he has the size, the ability, and I like that he does this type of stuff too. This MMA hybrid style of fighting and wrestling. And I have no problem with Calvin Tankman defeating Nolan Edwards, just for the record. Like, I think that Tankman in this situation should have gotten the win, but I feel like they got to give Nolan a little more respect. If they bring him back in for another blood sport, make sure that you know how to pronounce his name. Make sure you get his name right on the graphic and put him in there against someone and have him win and let people see what the hype is about. But that said, once again, Tankman was the right person to win this match. I think that Tankman is an incredibly talented guy, and I want to see more and more of him in these types of matches and more and more of him in MLW as well. So Tankman winds up getting the win, by the way, after it was basically like a ground and pound scenario. So Calvin Tankman gets Nolan Edwards on the ground and just lands strikes until the referee has to basically break it up. So it was a pretty short match, but it was good for what it was. And that puts Tankman's record at 2-1 and Nolan's record at 0-2. After that, we had Grizzly Cal Jack defeating Super Beast. Got the win by ref stoppage. The finish came when it was like a power bomb, but then the power bomb led to a head and arm choke or an arm triangle choke, depending on you know. What you want to call it, but it's the same thing. It's the difference. It's like calling a Kimura lock a double wrist lock. So a head and arm choke or an arm triangle choke, which puts Cal Jack at 2-1 and Super Beast at 1-1. After that, we had Royce Isaacs submit Alex Coughlin. Got the win with, it looked brutal. It was a dragon sleeper, and he did it like Sonata style. Just wrenched the hell out of it. I love the dragon sleeper. You know what? It's similar to an Epsonator, which is something you never really see actually successfully applied in MMA. But yeah, I mean, I love seeing that submission. The Dragon Sleeper is one of my favorite submission holds of all time. And Alex Coughlin takes another loss here, but Royce Isaacs looked damn good. So that puts Isaacs at 2-0 and Coughlin at 0-2. After that, we had a match where I was actually pretty surprised with this outcome. We had Rocky Romero submitting Simon Grimm. Now, Simon Grimm came into this at 0-4. So he's been, you know, a perennial loser in Bloodsport. Simon Grimm, of course, formerly known as Simon Gotch in WWE. Now, the finish came when Romero gets Grimm in like this arm lock. And Grimm keeps trying to reverse it and counter it and get out of it. And the more he does it, the deeper it gets. And Rocky Romero eventually, he gets the tap out. So, I mean, that was kind of surprising to me. Rocky Romero, I didn't expect to really be in Bloodsport. And I didn't really expect him to be successful in Bloodsport, especially against a guy like Grimm who, you know, granted, once again, he came into this, he had won once. Sorry, he was 1-3 coming into this fight. I don't want to misspeak. He was 1-3 coming into this fight. I forgot about his win. But that being said, I didn't expect Rocky Romero to beat him, and he gets the win. So Romero is 1-0, and Grimm is 1-4. After that, we had Chris Dickinson defeating J.R. Kratos. I really like seeing Dickinson get this win here because he's a guy who fits the Bloodsport. He fits in Bloodsport perfectly. Like, he's a guy who legitimately tough guy who has, you know, all these miles and years of independent wrestling. He's just tough as hell. And he's a good wrestler, but he's also got a mean streak. He's just perfect for Bloodsport. So it was great to see him, you know, finally get a win here in Bloodsport over J.R. Kratos. He got the win after he hit a really, really nice gut wrench German suplex, so I would highlight that. But he got the actual finish with a rear naked choke, and Kratos was forced to tap out. this was really, really good stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing more of, these two, fighting and wrestling each other in the future. Puts Dickinson's record at 1-4 and puts Kratos at 2-1. After that, in just a wild stylistic matchup, we had Jeff Cobb submitting Filthy Tom Lawler. Cobb got the win after... So basically, Cobb is going for German suplexes, and he had hit two of them, I think, back-to-back, and then Lawler goes to, counter it, and Cobb just puts him in a full Nelson and makes Lawler tap out in the full Nelson. Genius finish. Genius finish. That's the kind of finish that I think WWE will probably steal for Bobby Lashley at some point. That was a really, really well-done finish. Because normally, when you see people countering German suplexes, if they keep the hands locked, it's normally they break the grip or they go to switch it for reverse or something. Cobb just went straight into a full Nelson. Brilliant. And in this kind of setting, using a full Nelson works really well. Lashley uses it well on Raw as well, because he's so credible. But this was really well done. I liked this a lot. I liked the match. I loved the finish. Puts Jeff Cobb at 2-0 and puts Filthy Tom Lawler at 2-3, which is kind of surprising when you look at that, considering Filthy Tom Lawler was a former, top 10 contender in the UFC light heavyweight division. And in the main event, this was just awesome. This was one of my favorite matches of the entire year so far from any company. We had Jon Moxley defeating Davey Boy Smith Jr. via technical knockout. The finish came when Moxley hit a paradigm shift for the knockout onto Davey Boy Smith Jr. This was just a hell of a match. This would have been good in a wrestling ring, whether there was ropes or whether they were in a cage. The setting wouldn't have mattered. This was just a damn good match. This is the kind of stuff I really, really, really enjoy about pro wrestling. There's a lot of things I enjoy about it. I love the aerial aspect, the high flying, the athleticism. I love good mic work. I love good characters. Good storylines, long-term, well-told storylines. But something else I just love is just a good pro wrestling match. That's what this seemed like. This looked like a fight. It felt like a fight. It felt real. And these two guys went for it, and mission accomplished. This was awesome stuff, and the finish was great. Moxley at one point even bladed, in the middle of getting... I can't remember if he's getting punched or elbowed or probably a combination of both. Davey Boy was hitting these combinations, and during it, Moxley bladed, which was Shawn Michaels level of, for those of you who might not know, Michaels was kind of notorious for being great at using a blade to cut himself, during his matches to get color, to bleed during the match. And there's one clip that I'll never forget of the first Hell in a Cell match when it's Shawn Michaels versus the Undertaker. There's a point in that match where the Undertaker slingshots Michaels up into the cage, and Michaels blades in midair before he hits the cage, and that just kind of reminded me of that. But yeah, this whole thing was just incredible. Incredible. I love the show. I think that Bloodsport's just a hell of a concept. It is just an awesome concept, especially for people like me that are into mixed martial arts and into professional wrestling. We are the perfect kind of... crossover type of fan that is the perfect market for something like this. And when it's done this well, it makes me really excited to see the next one. So fantastic main event. I think it's just incredible that Jon Moxley is at the level that he's at. He doesn't have to be doing any of this stuff. He was just the world champion of AEW for a year. He's the main guy of this huge wrestling company, the second biggest company to the WWE. He can do whatever he wants, and he's spending some of his time giving back to the indies by doing this kind of stuff, and doing this because he loves it, because he wants to do it. It's just one of those things. It's just really, really cool to see a dude who was just suppressed for so long by the WWE and their creative process, and him just wanting out so bad, and now he gets to do stuff like this because he wants to, because this is fun for him, because, this is what makes him feel alive. I just think it's really, really, really awesome. And speaking of awesome, right as the show ends, they announce that on Bloodsport 6, so on April the 8th, we're supposed to finally get Josh Barnett versus John Moxley at Bloodsport. So hopefully it happens. It's like one of the most cursed matchups ever. You know, it's supposed to happen multiple times before. Hopefully this time it actually happens. For UFC fans, it reminds me kind of like Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov. Like if, for people who know the history there and how that fight never actually materialized, but it was promoted five different times. I'm hoping we actually get Moxley versus Barnett because it is a dream fight in this type of scenario. So great stuff from Bloodsport. You know, that was just, I can't say enough good things. Check that out. If you're a fan of mixed martial arts, or you're even a fan of like old school pro wrestling, I think you'll really enjoy that show. Moving on, we have MLW. So this was really funny because I tweeted out on Wednesday while I was watching this that I was going to be reviewing the show here on this show, the Fightful Weekender, today. And when I tweeted it out, Court Bauer responded, who is the CEO of MLW. So, you know, the Major League Wrestling CEO messages me and says, like, you've got a hell of an assignment this week. Good luck, buddy. Like, it was something like that. And it was like, oh, man, what are they about to do for this filthy island to where, like, the CEO of the company is making fun of it? So what is this about to be? And I'll tell you right off the bat, I really enjoyed this. I had a lot of fun. Similar to Bloodsport, it's a different kind of idea. I like the outdoor setting. You know, I like the kind of backyard wrestling type feel it has. I liked that they had Dan Lambert on commentary. I didn't expect that. You know, it was him and Tom Lawler doing the commentary for the show. And for those of you who don't know, Lambert is the head trainer of American Top Team, and he's like a massive longtime wrestling fan. He was a part of the Impact Wrestling angle years ago that involved Bobby Lashley and King Mo and, you know, a lot of the MMA guys. And a lot of people don't realize he has like one of the most impressive belt collections, like not replica belts. I'm pretty sure he collects like the actual belts that people were using on television. So, you know, Dan Lambert is a hell of a pro wrestling fan. So it is really cool to see his involvement, you know, especially in, you know, a setting like this. So as far as the matches, we had Dominic Guarini defeating Monaloa very, very, very quickly. And this is totally within Guarini's wheelhouse. He, of course, is a part of Team Filthy. Tom Lawler's putting on the event. Dominic Guarini is known for these type of fights in his background with his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu background and, you know, his belt level and all that stuff. Like, he's a very, very credible person for these type of scenarios. And, you know, he's a guy, he's a former Bone Storm champion at SUP in Nashville. He was a guy that I got to watch a lot live, and I've watched his career really, really take off in recent years. And it's been really cool to see. And this was perfect. Dom just, I mean, just complete destruction, just dropped. Basically what happened is Dom gets punched a bunch by Loa, and then Dom just throws Loa back into the ring after they go to the outside and just makes him tap out with the choke. So, I mean, it is what it should have been. Like, Loa went out, tried to get some offense in. Guarini said, nope, we're going to stop this right now. Threw in the rear naked choke, boom. No problems at all with that. After that, we had Kevin Koo, who is the teammate of Dominic Guarini and a stable member of Team Filthy. We had him taking on Zenshi. This was a better showing from Zenshi than last week. Last week, I was kind of harsh on Zenshi. I felt that Zenshi is constantly kind of trying to put a hat on a hat. Like, there would be a really cool move that he'll go for, but instead of just, like, doing the cool move, it'll be, like, two moves and then the cool move all as one. It's hard to explain. It's like if you're watching The Karate Kid and, you know, Daniel is going to hit the crane kick. So the crane kick's already extra, right? Like, you already have the leg up before you go for the actual kick. And that's cool. Like, that's what makes it cool. That's what makes it more than just, like, a front kick to the face. It's that you do the crane part before it, and you use the momentum, and you kick up with your other leg. But Zenshi is the kind of guy who, like, would do the crane kick, but then switch to the other leg up, and then switch the other leg up, and then, like, finally go for the front kick to the face and just kind of like fall over or miss is like how I've kind of felt about Zenshi lately. Now, this match was different. I thought this was good. I thought Kevin Kyu looked great. And Kyu is a guy that I'm obviously a huge fan of. He's a guy I've had the opportunity of interviewing, and he does amazing work by, you know, running Southern Underground Pro in Nashville. And the fact that he's able to balance that with his own indie career, with his, you know, blossoming MLW career and all the attention he's going to be getting in the near future because, you know, he keeps getting better and better. And I think his pairing with Guarini is great. I love that they work well as singles guys and as a tag team. I think they're very versatile and there's a lot you can do with both guys. And it adds that extra layer having Lawler associated with them. And like, once again, Zenshi, much better week this week. But this was all about Kyu. And I like that, you know, because Kyu doesn't have the same background as Guarini, he doesn't go in and just work people like Guarini does. Like, he got his win, but he had to earn it over Zenshi. Whereas Guarini just kind of like, you know, squashed Loa, you know what I mean? Once again, it all makes sense. This all logically makes perfect sense. Kevin Kyu wound up getting the win with a dragon suplex for the 1-2-3. It was really well done. I thought he was going to make him tap out with the Canadian, what do you call it? The Canadian maple leaf, the one-legged Boston crab. But you know, ultimately got the one with the dragon suplex, which I like a lot because you don't see that end matches enough, and it's a good move that should be used as a finisher, in my opinion. So, really good stuff. Speaking of stuff that I didn't like so much, we had this jungle fight that lasted like throughout the whole show. At, you know, various points, the cameras would go back and see what was happening in the jungle fight. But Mil Muertes defeats Savio Vega, got the win after. He like knocks him out. They're fighting each other in the dark, and I almost call him Mil Mascaris. Wow, Mil Muertes, you know, pins Savio Vega. There's just not a whole lot to talk about here. After the match, Mil digs a grave, you know, to put Savio in. So, you know, there's that as well as far as, you know, for the story. We got an interesting interview with TJP talking about Buku Dao, and you know, it's a good interview, and Alicia Atut is so good at her job. I think she's great. So that was good as well. You know, it really putting over TJP is just more and more of a jerk on the show. After that, we had Gringo Loco losing to Rocky Romero. So Romero got the win with a tornado DDT. It's been good to see Gringo Loco as a part of the shows. He's a guy that I saw years back at Glory Pro in the St. Louis area. And he, when I first saw him, I was just confused. I was like, this kind of overweight dude rocking like a full USA bodysuit, but he's called Gringo Loco, which I'm like, that sounds like a luchador name. Like, I had no idea what to expect out of the guy. He had like stars and stuff, like shaved into his hair and stuff. I was like, I have no idea what to expect out of this guy. And he went out to the ring and completely killed it. Like, his matches were awesome that I got to see live at Glory Pro. So I immediately became a fan, and he's a perfect example of not judging a book by its cover. You know, he's been doing more stuff lately in MLW, and I hope they continue to use him, because I talk often about how important it is to be different in pro wrestling. Gringo Loco is something different, and he's entertaining. And Rocky Romero, like I said, been a pretty wild week for him. He gets the win here on this show with that tornado DDT. 1-2-3 over Gringo Loco, but also got that win over Simon Grimm at Bloodsport. So a big win for Rocky Romero. And this is also worth mentioning, of course, Rocky Romero, you know, part of New Japan Pro Wrestling, coming over, doing some stuff with MLW. We've been seeing MLW crossovers with AAA. Of course, AAA, their mega champion is Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega, of course, the AEW World Champion. AEW, of course, working with Impact Wrestling. It's all very, very, very entertaining, very interesting. You know, we got the NWA out there. We got some of their champions that have been popping up other places, like in AEW. Great times to be a fan of independent pro wrestling right now. And in the main event, this one was way shorter than I expected. We had Loki defeating King Mo. I like this matchup a lot. But yeah, it was just a quick, like, Mo, you know, goes for a takedown, Loki takes his back and gets the submission with the choke. So I just did not see that coming. I thought King Mo would win this. I know King Mo won their first match, but I was expecting Mo to get this win again here. Low-key just makes quick work of him and just gets a slick submission, so did not see that coming. And afterwards, Team Filthy attack Low-key, and then he gets saved by the Von Erichs, who had done a promo earlier in the night, and they were out in the mountains and basically said they were coming to the show. And they pull up in their car, and I can't remember what song. I think it was like Stranglehold was like playing on their speakers when they pulled up. Like it was, it was pretty well done. It was pretty cliche and a little corny, but I guess it's more realistic than pulling up with no music playing. So, there's that, I guess. But overall, I was entertained by the show, and shout out to Court Bauer for tweeting me during that. So if you listen to this, I enjoyed it. I enjoy everything y'all are doing over there at MLW. I think you have a lot of talent over there. I like that you have a one-hour show where you don't have to oversaturate the talent on a weekly basis. And I think y'all have a great eye for talent. There's a lot of really good, really, really good people there right now. And I've really enjoyed everything that's been going on for the most part. There's little things here and there, but you're going to get that with every show. But since the restart, I think MLW has been really, really solid. Moving on, we have Impact Wrestling results. Now, if you want to join me to watch these live, myself and Joel Pearl have been going live on Twitch on the Fightful Gaming Twitch channel doing Impact Wrestling watch-alongs. We have the show live right there that you can watch off our channel, and you see me and Joel on camera. We'll have Jeremy Lambert there, I think, every other week. So every 2 weeks, you should see Jeremy, I think. And then we'll probably have like kind of a revolving third guest every now and then too. So if you want to kick it and hang out there on Twitch with us, highly recommend it. It's a really good time, and we're really interactive with the chat. So check that out over at twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. As far as the show went, first match, I really enjoyed the match. We had TJP retaining the X Division Championship over Josh Alexander. Josh Alexander got this this opportunity by winning that that multi-man match at, was it No Surrender? I get all the show names and dates and stuff all mixed up all the time. But Alexander won that X Division. It was like that triple threat match that, kept becoming more triple threat matches until, like, I think there was like six or so people involved total. But Alexander won that match. That got him this title shot. And TJP got the win with the Mamba Splash. Really good match. I just think the wrong person won. I really don't have anything against TJP as far as his in-ring work. I think that Josh Alexander just needs something big to do. And I don't think the right move is necessarily putting him right back in another tag team. And I think that he needs a singles push. And I just don't see him becoming like the world champion right away. So it's like I just don't want to see him get lost in the mix. I think he's way too talented for that. And I think TJP is going to be okay either way. So it's like, I would have liked to see Josh Alexander get the win here. But that being said, it was a really good match and a great showing by both guys. After that, we had a fatal four-way match where Trey Miguel defeated Suicide, Daivari, and Willie Mack. Got the win with a diving Meteora for the 1-2-3. I like the match. I like everyone involved. I'm not the biggest Suicide fan, but it's not like I hate him either. Nothing like that. Daivari, I say it all the time, doing the best work of his career right now, which is wild. Willie Mack. And that's what I'm talking about with Josh Alexander. Willie Mack is lost in the shuffle, and I hate to see it. He's too talented to just be another guy, and that's kind of what he's becoming. So I'm hoping Impact Wrestling can turn that around soon, because they should really be pushing Willie Mack. But once again, I sound like a broken record. I say that every week. And Trey Miguel getting the win, it makes sense. He has the buzz right now, and he's great in the ring. The only critique I have, the only one, because I'm a huge fan of his, I'm not a fan of the Meteora. I never have been. I just don't think it's that good of a move. Especially for a guy like Trey Miguel, who can do so much and do so many cool, just cool moves and cool stuff. The Meteora is just a little anticlimactic for me. I'm just going to be honest. So that's my only critique. I want to see him using a different move, but for his finisher. But outside of that, no issues at all. After that, Matt Cardona defeats Hernandez, gets the win with Radio Silence, which was the Rough Rider in the WWE for the 1-2-3. No problems here. You had Brian Myers out there with Hernandez, which you know, no issue at all. They're still, after the match, Eddie Edwards comes out after Hernandez and Myers are attacking Cardona and all that stuff. So they're continuing this story with Cardona and Edwards on one side, Hernandez and Myers on the other side. You know, Myers' team won at No Surrender. I don't know. It's tough. I'm a huge fan of both guys on a personal level. I love the Major Figure Pod. I'm a big fan of both guys. I just don't want to see them wrestling each other when you watch them. I know kayfabe's dead. I get that. But it is still a little weird when, you know, you're watching them fighting each other on Impact like they hate each other. And then literally days later, you watch their YouTube channel. And it's a big YouTube channel. It's not like just a few people are seeing this. It's like a large portion of the Impact Wrestling audience is seeing the Major Pod in their vlogs, where they're literally, you know, buying action figures together before they head to the show we just watched. You know, it's like, it is a little strange. After that, we had Finjuice defeating Reno Scum. This was a smart move for them to put Reno Scum in there against Finjuice. Joel Pearl talked about that, pointed that out during our Twitch watch along, and I agree with him there. I think that Finjuice was, they look good. The only thing is Juice Robinson. There's something that's just, I need something to click with him for me. Like, I want to like him. And it's not like I hate the guy, but there's always just something a little off. Like, he has like this weird Blues Brother look to him now, which I just don't relate to at all. You know, Dave Finley, no issue at all with. He's just a solid worker, you know, but Juice Robinson, there's something off there. And once he fixes it, I feel like I'm going to be a huge fan. It's just, we got to figure out what that is. But no issues here. The finish came when we got a superplex into a diving splash for the 1-2-3. So Finjuice gets the win. Obviously predictable. That's what you would expect. Finjuice getting the win in their Impact Wrestling debut. And after that, we had Tennille Dashwood defeating Nevaeh. Of course, Dashwood had Caleb with a K in her corner. Dashwood gets the win with a spotlight kick. And, you know, I was kind of surprised by the win, because they have pushed Nevaeh quite a bit, especially with her team with Havoc. But I could see them pushing Tennille Dashwood. I could see that happening. And that might be exactly where it's heading. I mean, you know, Impact could always use more, you know, more women in the mix, in their title mix, whether it be the tag titles or the Knockouts Championship. But we'll see where this goes, because the only reservation I have with Tennille Dashwood is she seems to kind of bounce around from company to company a lot. You know, I'm never quite sure. It always feels like right when you get something good to sink your teeth into with her, then she's not in the company anymore. So let's see how this plays out. But I don't think it's a bad idea to push Tennille Dashwood. I think she's talented, and I think she still has, you know, a really big fan base. So we'll see where this push heads. But, you know, Dashwood with the win with the spotlight kick. And then in the main event, we had Tommy Dreamer and Moose in an old school rules match, where Moose gets the win after a spear. Tommy Dreamer was going for a kendo stick, and Tommy Dreamer gets nailed with that spear that no jackhammer needed for the 1-2-3. All makes sense. I mean, Moose is the next title challenger. He shouldn't be going out there taking L's to Tommy Dreamer, no matter what the stipulations are. And I have this gut feeling, and I have for a while, that Moose is going to be the next Impact World Champion. That's going to be my prediction. I think he beats Rich Swann for that belt. They've done a very, very good job of building Moose up. They really have. So, you know, and now if Rich Swann gets that win, it's only going to make Rich look better, which I'm fine with too. But I really feel like, given the build and the time they've put into this and the character work and the improvement of Moose, I got to give him a lot of credit too. He's improved a lot over the last year, even over the last 6 months. So, you know, another decent show from Impact Wrestling this week. I enjoyed it. And once again, you can hang out and watch with us live on twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. After that, let's see what we got next. 205 Live results. Only two matches here, which is pretty much par for the course at this point with 205 Live. Always going to be solid matches with solid wrestlers, though. First match, we had Kurt Stallion, Mansoor, Jake Atlas, and Ashanti the Adonis defeated the team of Bali Rise, which of course is the team of the Sunil and Samir Singh, the Singh brothers. The Singh brothers is what I'm trying to say. And Everrise. And the finish came when Kurt Stallion hit Sunil with his, I don't know what they call it on 205 Live. On the indies, they called it Ode to Luigi. It's a diving running headbutt. And, you know, I always like seeing Kurt Stallion get those wins. Big fan of his. First ever Bone Storm champion at SUP. Two thumbs up for this W. No issues here. Good match. Right person won. Right person got the pinfall. All good stuff. And the only other match we had is... Oh, by the way, I'll mention they did show a recap of Santos Escobar and Karrion Kross. They're going to be wrestling on NXT next week, so, you know, check that out. Which is wild, like, that the Cruiserweight champion on NXT is involved with, like, one of the main people of NXT on, you know, on Wednesdays, and Karrion Kross is not a Cruiserweight. So, completely different story going on over there. But as far as the main event for 205 Live, we had Arya Daivari defeating August Gray with the wristlock lariat for the 1-2-3. Very surprising result, in my opinion. They've been doing a pretty good job of building August Gray as, like, the next guy. Because what it felt like for me was you had Kurt Stallion go on a good run and, you know, get that number one contendership against Escobar. And then, you know, he failed in his attempt. It was a really great match. I really enjoyed it. But Stallion loses, and so it felt like, okay, well, August Gray is probably the next one, because he's buddies with Stallion, and he hasn't gotten his shot yet, and, you know, Gray had been getting some wins, and it felt like that's where it was heading, and then, you know, Arya Daivari gets the win here. Now, granted, Tony Nese was on commentary, and he distracted August Gray, so there is that layer to it, so it wasn't a clean victory, but if you're building someone to go for a title, especially somebody who's been as dominant as Escobar has, who's been the champion for as long as he has, and with the people he's beaten, with the title on the line, you know, especially guys like Kurt Stallion and Swerve and stuff, some really formidable opponents. And now, you know, going into a match against Karrion Kross, former NXT champion, I don't want to see August Gray losing matches like this by any circumstance if he is the next guy. Now, is he? I'm not sure. I just had a feeling that he was, and now I'm not so sure about it. But interesting decision there in the main event, in my opinion. But, you know, two good matches with, you know, everyone involved is a very good talent. You know, it's a fun show to watch. So, you know, check out 205 Live. They are doing good stuff over there. And so is NXT UK. Speaking of, first match they had this week, Heritage Cup on the line. A Kid defending against Shaw Samuels. We had A Kid retaining the cup by defeating Samuels with a submission. It was actually a verbal submission due to an omoplata. So a few things here. One, A Kid, they've been doing a great job of building A Kid. Second thing, getting wins with omoplatas. I love that. I think it's an underutilized move in professional wrestling. It's a move that's very, very hard to pull off in mixed martial arts. I believe Ben Saunders hit the first one ever in the UFC, if I remember correctly, and there might have only been, like, one since then. So we're talking, like, one or two omoplata finishes in UFC history. And it's cool to see that in pro wrestling, because it's a devastatingly, you know, painful move. And I like that got the win for A-Kid here. Really good stuff. After that, we had Ben Carter defeating Josh Morrell. Got the win with a frog splash. I like this a lot, you know. The frog splash was nice. Ben Carter is a super talent. He's a guy who I really think, if built correctly, he would be a really good challenger for Walter's title. I don't think he would necessarily beat Walter for that belt, but he presents something totally different than most of Walter's challengers. And I really want to see Ben Carter just get this slow push, and which has been what's happening. Like, he came in, I think when he came in, he lost to Jordan Devlin, I think, right away. But it's like Jordan Devlin is, you know, like one of their top guys, you know, the Cruiserweight champion and all that. And since then, Ben Carter's been getting wins. And I think you just slowly kind of keep upping his competition level. And eventually he's there. And I think Ben Carter is a guy that the company can really get behind. I really believe that much in his talent. He still hasn't even hit his prime. He's nowhere even close to hitting his prime yet, probably. So, you know, huge shout out to Ben Carter there. After that, Danny Luna defeated Aaliyah James, got the win with a sit-out powerbomb. That was nice. I always liked the sit-out powerbomb. I always thought that was a good move. And it was always kind of weird to me how often you would see like a regular powerbomb be a finisher, but the sit-out powerbomb would get kicked out of. So I like seeing it as a finisher. Solid stuff here. Luna with the win. And after that, we got the match that's been building up for quite a while now between Joe Coffey and Rampage Brown. As my prediction is correct, Rampage Brown did win, got the win over Joe Coffey. Coffey was going for his finisher, the All the Best for the Bells, and it was reversed into a Dr. Bomb for the 1-2-3. Dr. Bombs always look devastating when hit correctly, and Rampage Brown gets the win. This was really good stuff, hard-hitting stuff, exactly what you would have expected between these two. And after the match, they keep kind of talking and yelling at each other, and then they shake hands. It's a show of respect, which is exactly how this should have ended. I really like the match. I like the finish. I like kind of the conclusion here to the story. Maybe they become a tag team and become like a super dominant tag team from here. Or maybe they go their separate ways and there's always that respect between the two. So a few different ways I can go from here. But I think the result is what we kind of expected, right? Like NXT UK has been pushing the hell out of Rampage Brown. And this was another step in that process. After this, you know, Joe Coffey's pretty much like a gatekeeper for that NXT UK title. He's had title shots of his own. But, you know, beating Joe Coffey, especially decisively, that puts you in the mix for the world title. And I think Rampage Brown, he'll probably be, unless I'm forgetting someone, I think Rampage Brown will probably be the next big legitimate threat to Walter. So we'll see how that all plays out. Moving on, we have results for Ring of Honor. Two matches here, both very good. The first one, LSG defeats Tony Deppen. LSG gets the win with a Hangman Bomb. I don't know if he has a different name for it. It is almost impossible for me to describe. Basically puts Tony Deppen in a Gory Bomb position and then picks him up and makes him do like a full flip into a sit out powerbomb type thing. Wild stuff. It's a move that you definitely can't do to everybody, but when you're doing it to someone Tony Deppen size, it looks very impressive. And you know, I'm a big Deppen fan. I've been hearing for a minute that he is going to be heading to a major company soon, so keep your eyes on Tony Deppen. And LSG, I mean, this solid win. And I think that's part of why Deppen loses as often as he does in Ring of Honor. I think he's just there for a short time. Similar to Blake Christian when he was with Impact Wrestling before it was announced that he had signed to the WWE. I think we're getting a similar situation right now with Tony Deppen in Ring of Honor. After that, we have the main event, which was basically the foundation in a six-man tag team match, where we had Jay Lethal, Rhett Titus, and Wheeler Yuta on one side, defeating the team of Jonathan Gresham, Tracy Williams, and Fred Yehi, which I love everybody involved in this match. I'm a huge fan of all six of these. The finish was a bit surprising, though. Rhett Titus got the win with a dropkick to the head of Fred Yehi. It's like a standard-looking dropkick, but clocked him with it. And I talked about Yehi a little bit before. Huge fan of his. Think he's a great wrestler. All these guys are great technical wrestlers. And this was really, really good stuff. And in all honesty, the team that I think was more stacked was the losing team. You know, I would have taken Gresham, Williams, and Yehi over Lethal, Titus, and Yuta any day of the week, to be honest. And they surprised me with the finish here. And Rhett getting the win especially, I didn't expect. So interesting stuff, and I continue to be very intrigued by the Pure division of Ring of Honor, and I'm even more intrigued if they end up getting involved with these other companies that I've been talking about, because the Foundation stable, and of course, you know, someone like Roosh, the Ring of Honor World Champion, they'd make for some very interesting crossovers into the world of AEW or Impact or New Japan or whatever they wind up doing. You know, I talked about MLW earlier. You know, Jacob Fatu would be awesome on any show. I mean, there's so much upside to the co-promoting that's going on right now. But yeah, Ring of Honor, you know, they're putting on really solid matches, and that's all you can really say, I think. They have very little buzz, but if you're paying attention to what they're doing, the talent's there. Like, they have great talent, especially if you're looking at like a technical aspect. They have a great group of technical wrestlers there. And I think they would be really cool as like a, as kind of like their own group in this fight against wrestling. Like, you know, on one side you could kind of have a group of wrestlers who are, you know, these high flyers and stuff, and then you have the Foundation that are like trying to preserve technical wrestling and all this. And you have other guys too that aren't involved that definitely could be soon, like Lee Moriarty and Daniel Macabre. Like, there's some really great technical wrestlers out there. And that's what makes me so excited about the future for Ring of Honor right now is to see more and more of how they push the technical wrestling aspect, because that's really what put Ring of Honor on the map to begin with, right? You know, they had the Pure title before, but before the you know, when you had like Brian Danielson and Nigel McGuinness and Samoa Joe and just all the people they had, Loki, and you know, you can just name on and on, just the people that were just these great technical wrestlers and how all their styles, you know, mashed up. Just really, you know, CM Punk, of course, I can just go on and on. Chris Hero. So yeah, I like seeing that Ring of Honor seems to be getting kind of more back to their roots. All right, last set of, I guess, recaps, if you will. You have the latest Being the Elite episode titled Dior. Starts off with Matt and Nick Jackson in the Atlanta airport. Nothing really to talk about here. They're trying to board their flight. Eventually they do. They were like stuck there for a while, and they just talk about Nike Jordan shoes a lot, which is not a part of the world that I pay attention to at all. Like, I'm a collector. I collect action figures and autographs and a whole bunch of stuff, but I never got into collecting shoes, so I couldn't tell you a pair of Jordans from the other personally. I respect people who collect them. I just don't know anything about that world. After that, we had some clips and recaps of Matt Hardy and Private Party and all the stuff that they've been going through lately as a stable. We had, this was the funniest part of the show. Silver and Reynolds are trying to recruit Sting and Darby Allin to the Dark Order. So, like, they go up to the rafters of the arena that they're in, and it's Luther and Serpentico. And John Silver mistakes Luther and Serpentico for being Darby Allin and Sting, which that alone was hilarious. And then Luther yells some stuff at them, and that I don't think was quite as funny, but just the fact that they had a bit where they mistaked Sting and Darby Allin for Luther and Serpentico just cracked me up. After that, we had Brandon Cutler. That's right. The Bunny and Penelope Ford are playing Animal Crossing on their Nintendo Switches. And there's a bunch of Harry Potter jokes in here. And once again, Harry Potter, I know there's a huge fan base for it. I never got into it, so all this stuff is just over my head. Then we get more Dark Order stuff, and this is just, see, there's kind of a theme right now. There's a lot of really lame stories right now on Being the Elite, if we're being totally honest. There's some really good stuff, but a lot of it's just really lame at this point. We have like a Karate Kid style showdown between the Dark Order, and we have like Santana, Ortiz, Abrahantes, like that whole side too, and Vicky Guerrero's spirit gets involved in this, and Ortiz eventually, you know, basically, you know, beats Abrahantes, and then the Dark Order, you know, runs away. I mean, this is all just a story that's been going on for way too long, and I just don't care about it. After that, we have a story that I do care about, where Evil Uno and is talking with Dark Order, and like they don't get like why Hangman Page likes Matt Hardy, but he doesn't want to join up with them, and Anna Jay eventually says that, you know, that they basically are better off without Hangman Page. And a lot of this, you know, you'd have to be watching weekly to understand, but basically Anna Jay was like, Hangman Page at one point was considering hanging out more with the Dark Order, and Anna Jay basically said for him to stop basically teasing them. Like, you've hurt their feelings enough, like, stop hanging out here. And five also heard this happen. So you have to keep all that in mind. So Anna Jay is basically telling them, like, it isn't our fault. Like, let's forget about Hangman Page and move on. After that, we have Vicious Vixen auditions, which is a bunch of dancing for Vicky Guerrero and Nyla Rose. We see Griff Garrison and Scorpio Sky and some others doing this stuff. And once again, over my head, just not funny, not entertaining. The Nyla Rose, Vicky Guerrero stuff has been bad. The just random dancing is silly. So once again, just a big miss for me here. We have just clips of Brandon Cutler falling asleep again at the airport because I guess they've run out of other stuff to show us. You know, this is like multiple weeks in a row. Like, we get it. Brandon Cutler falls asleep all the time when there's nothing else going on. All right. And then at the end of the show, we find out that Sammy Guevara will be defending the BTE Championship on his vlog. And Cutler is trying to get him to defend it on BTE, but Guevara says he's only going to defend it on his vlog. So we'll see what happens there, and we'll see if that has anything to do with kind of the rumors about Sammy and Impact Wrestling and all that stuff, if that has to do with this as well. But that's it. I'm going to say pretty much mainly a big miss this week for being the Elite, if I'm being completely honest. Hopefully they come up with some new bits, some more interesting stories. The Hangman Page Dark Order stuff is good. The Matt Hardy Private Party stuff has been pretty good for the most part. And there's probably some things here and there that I'm missing. But for the most part, it's a bunch of misses right now. All right, and before we get out of here, let me give you some Elimination Chamber predictions. Just going to run through a list here. If you want a full detailed review or prediction show, I should say, if you want a full prediction show, go to Jesse Davin's YouTube channel, type in JSSIDAVIN on YouTube, and I did a full prediction with my buddy Throwback over there. So shout out to Throwback. But these are my predictions for Elimination Chamber, which happens tonight as of the time of this recording. I'm going to say that, well, this match wasn't even on the predictions that we saw. So we have Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler versus Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair. Will they do the whole make them a tag team champion and then they fight each other at WrestleMania thing with Belair and Banks? I could see them doing that. I could also see one turning on the other. But you know what? Screw it. I'm going to say Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks win the titles from Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. After that, we have... I'll say that Bobby Lashley defeats MVP... With MVP, defeats Keith Lee and Riddle. So I'll say Bobby Lashley retains the U.S. title by defeating Riddle and Keith Lee. I'll say in the Raw Chamber, I'll take McIntyre to retain the title over AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Kofi Kingston. In the SmackDown Chamber, I'll say Cesaro. I'll go Cesaro with the big win here. I'll say Cesaro defeats Jey Uso, Kevin Owens, King Corbin, Sami Zayn, and Daniel Bryan. But then I think, you know, because Roman Reigns is going to fight the winner of that for with the Universal title on the line, I'm going to say that Roman Reigns defeats Cesaro, or for that matter, you know, no matter who Roman Reigns winds up wrestling tonight for the title, I think Roman Reigns retains because I feel like he has to be the champion heading into WrestleMania, and there's no point in beating him right now at all. So I'm going to say Roman Reigns, you know, retains the Universal Championship. So those are my predictions, and that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to shoot me a follow over on Twitter at FightTalk_FIGHTTALK_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.